Despite being a high-profile case, the killer of Elizabeth Short has never been found. Or at least that's what we think. I'm Felicia Huffman, and this is Macabre at Midnight. All right, then. Welcome back. As you can hear by the giggles, Leslie and Lucas is back with us again. I mean, it's only right they got to help us finish up talking about Black Dahlia.
Yes.
I might be a little bit tipsy.
She may or may not have taken some Jell-O shots.
Like 8 of them.
Like 8. Maybe 8. We stopped counting.
Yeah. Well, we wanted to get them out of the fridge.
They're dangerous.
Because they were working on that getting bad. And I didn't want to waste them.
Yeah. And you can have them with whipped cream. And it covers up even more of the alcohol taste. And
but 10 out of 10, do not do it. With grape.
Cool Whip doesn't look good with well with grape.
No, grape in general.
Oh, grape in general. Oh, okay.
I like grape Jell-O. It's just a cool thing. It'll go good with the grape and the alcohol.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know how it would do plain, because who wants plain Jell-O when you're an adult?
Right.
Plain.
Peach is dangerous.
Peach is dangerous. Peach is over. You can't taste it.
Can't taste it at all.
Anything else to say before I jump into this?
I can't remember the name of the horror movie right now because my brain's impaired. But it's by Del Toro and it's about a haunted house. I think it's like something the dark.
Don't Be Afraid of the Dark?
Yes. Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. Have you seen it?
I have not.
I got it for us to watch. I was wondering if you've seen it so we can talk about it. But you haven't. So we can.
Okay.
So I know what I'm prepared for. It's Del Toro, so I don't want to be scared shitless. Like, Del Toro is like...
I don't know. He's a horror legend.
Alright, so last week we went over the murder of Elizabeth Short. Now we're going to look at the suspect list. There's actually a long list of possible suspects. Some are ones the police investigated and others are people amateur sleuths or retired detectives believe could have done it. Next to the 1927 murder of Marion Parker, the investigation into Elizabeth's murder was one of the largest investigations by the LA Police Department. Since the case was so complex, the original investigators treated everybody who knew Elizabeth Short as a suspect who they had to eliminate. Hundreds of people were considered suspects and thousands more were interviewed by the police. Around 60 people confessed to being the killer, mostly men, but there were a few women. However, 24 people were considered to be viable suspects by the DA. These people were Carl Balsinger, we'll go with that.
That sounds right.
C. Welsh, Sergeant Chuck, his actual name is unknown. John D. Wade, Joe Scalia.
Sounds like a G.I. Joe doll.
Joe Scalise, James Nimmo, Maurice Clement, a Chicago police officer. Salvador Torres Vera, Dr. George Hodell, Marvin Margolis, Glenn Wolfe, Michael Anthony Otero, George Bakos, Jacob Edward Fisk, Francis Campbell, queer woman surgeon, Dr. Paul DeGaston, Dr. A. E. Bricks, Dr.
I'm assuming queer woman surgeon is not her actual name.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what her actual name is. That's just how she is referred to. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Dr. M.M. Schwartz, Dr. Arthur McGinnis Fault, Dr. Patrick S. O'Reilly, Mark Hansen, and Benjamin Bugsy Siegel. He is considered very unlikely.
So you said one was a female cop,
right? Not a female cop, just female in general.
Okay. I don't know where I got cop from.
Daniel S. Voorhees was a suspect early on, but was dismissed. While a number of the original 24 were discounted, there are new ones that have arisen. Let's look at who are considered current suspects. First is Walter Bailey. He was a surgeon who lived a block south of the vacant lot where Elizabeth's body was discovered, until October 1946, when he left his wife. His daughter was a friend of Elizabeth's sister, Virginia, and had served as the matron of honor at her wedding. When Bailey died in January 1948, his autopsy found that he was suffering from a degenerative brain disease. After he died, his widow said that his mistress knew a terrible secret about him and that she was made the main beneficiary upon his death because of this. He was never considered to be a suspect in the case. However, a number of medical professionals were. Bailey was 67 when the murder took place, had no known history of criminal activity or violence, and is not known to have met Elizabeth, even though his daughter knew her older sister.
You know, when they say it's like, he has no known history of violence, I'm like, okay, just because he has no known doesn't mean he can't be violent.
Yeah. Right.
It takes one bad day.
It does, and like that's what kills me is like sometimes they discount suspects who could be the actual killer because, oh, he's never been violent before.
Yeah.
I mean, A, maybe he hasn't been violent before. Maybe this was his first offense. B, he could have done and not been caught before.
That's a trope. It's just when someone goes off the rails, I can't believe they did this. They were so quiet and nice and just a part of the community. Yeah,
that's a lot of people into the community to make themselves a suspect when things like that happen.
John Wayne Gacy.
Yep.
But yeah, you never see on the news like, yep, I saw him doing it. He's totally a killer. They never say that.
I expected Bill to kill all those people. I mean, I just knew it.
There are certain people who we went to college with, in school with. Yeah, this was like, oh, so-and-so killed somebody. I was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. there are a few. Hey. That would not surprise me that much.
You go to high school for that type of thing, too. Playing in high school, kids are like, one day, I'm going to hear something about you in the news.
There were a few.
I knew it.
I think somebody in it for the news, I was like, oh, it's you. Oh, that's not a surprise.
Larry Harnish, a copy editor for the LA Times, started to study the case in 1996 and concluded that Bailey might have been the killer. There were critics that questioned if Bailey's health would have allowed him to commit this type of crime. However, the original investigators believing that the body was cut in half because the killer couldn't move it in one piece partially answers this objection. Harnish.
Think about that dead body, dead weight. You cut it in half, it will be lighter. Cut in half, it in a hole.
Fair, but it's not like she was a heavy woman.
Yeah, but dead weight.
But you take a 60-year-old man with a degenerative brain disorder.
Fair point.
Also, I mean, bodies, I don't think she was bloated, but bodies bloat, fluids build up, therefore making them heavier.
Well, that's why they were drained. No, she was also drained of blood.
But she was only drained of blood because she was cut in half.
Yeah. So that's why she was extenuated. 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 Big words are not my forte right
now. She was vampired, I know.
Well, I mean, yeah, vampires cut you in half. That's more like a werewolf thing.
Depends what you watch.
Harnish believed that Bailey's neurological deterioration contributed to the violence. Some believe his mistress was blackmailing him. However, there isn't any evidence of this. Among the evidence that Harnish had is that Bailey's neurodegenerative condition was known to produce violent behavior in otherwise passive people. His surgical specializations were hysterectomies, mastectomies, and the surgical removal of fat. In talking to Bailey's former receptionist, Harnish found out that he and his mistress would, at dinner time, watch movies of autopsies and surgeries. Because, yum.
At dinner time? At dinner? I watch films, so I can't say much, but I mean, it's not an actual autopsy. it's like, oh, look, here's a dead body. Cut to her and booth through something stupid. By stupid, I mean, like, confronting a bad guy in a dark alley with no backup.
See, you say that, However, you sat right here and ate some chicken while they showed a person that had been melted to cardboard.
It's all fantasy. In the TV shows.
I mean, the difference. It's fake. Different.
It's fantasy versus an actual autopsy. Like, I cannot sit through an actual autopsy. Like, no. I can't.
I can't sit through plenty of doctor shows because I'm just like, eh, no, I'm out.
He does. And I feel bad for him because I watch a lot of doctor shows.
Yeah, you do.
And coming up with his theory, Harnish spoke with retired FBI profile John E. Douglas, profiler John E. Douglas, who said that the public location of the dump site was significant since the killer could have transported the body to a more remote area.
They wanted it to be found.
The site was a block from his estranged wife's house. Douglas also said that the facial lacerations indicated personal anger towards the victim. This anger could have come from the fact that Elizabeth was known to falsely tell men that she had a son who had tragically died. Bailey did have a son who had been struck by a car and killed at age 11. His son's birthday was January 13th, and Elizabeth's body was found on the 15th.
That's sad. I mean, that could have been, like, a stressor. They say, like, people can be dormant or whatever, and then something happens, an event. An anniversary can be a stressor.
Yeah, and the fact that he had the brain thing. But my only issue is it's not known that he ever actually met Elizabeth.
Yeah, that's what you mean.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's like just because they say he didn't meet her doesn't mean he didn't meet her and we don't know about it.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel like you'd have to know her for it to be that level of personal relation.
And she would have,
oh, you're my friends, you're my daughter's friend. Ships passing the night type thing.
Yeah. And she would have probably had to try that line on him of lying about having had a son that tragically died.
Yeah, exactly.
Leslie Dillon is another suspect that has been significantly investigated. He was a 27-year-old bellhop aspiring writer and former mortician's assistant who became a suspect once he started to write to the LAPD psychiatrist, Dr. J. Paul DeRiver, in October 1948. Dillon was living in Florida when he started his correspondence, but he used to live in L.A. He read a story about the Dahlia case in a True Detective Top magazine where DeRiver was quoted and wrote him regarding his theories on the case. In his letters, he talked about his intense interest in sadism and sexual violence in the hopes of writing a book on the subject. Dillon offered up one of his friends, Jeff Connors, as a possible suspect. During their time writing...
What a good friend.
During their time writing to each other, DeRiver began to believe that Connors didn't exist and that Dillon had committed the murder. In December 1948, Dillon said he would meet with DeRiver and was given the choice of meeting in one of three cities, L.A., Phoenix, Arizona, or Las Vegas, Nevada. Dillon was concerned about going to L.A. and went with Las Vegas instead. DeRiver and an undercover cop met Dillon in Las Vegas for a few days, and then they all drove to California. Once there, Dillon and DeRiver went to San Francisco to try and look for Connors. When Dillon shared intimate information about the crime, they took him into custody and took him back to L.A. After this, Dillon threw a postcard out of a hotel window with a plea for help. It was found by a passerby and given to the authorities. Police soon found out that Connors was a real person and his name was Artie Lane. Lane was living in L.A. at the time of the murder and worked at Columbia Studios, which was a favorite hangout of Elizabeth's. Dillon, however, could not be conclusively placed in San Francisco at the time of the murder. In fact, the police were never able to account for Dillon's whereabouts between January 9th and 15th. Dillon...
Was he scared to go to California because of his friend?
No. I think he was scared to go to California in general about getting arrested or whatever.
Okay.
Dillon filed a $100,000 claim against the city of Los Angeles, but dropped the suit after it came out that he was wanted by Santa Monica police for robbery. Mm. The next suspect is Mark Hansen. He was a Hollywood nightclub owner, and Elizabeth had been known to stay at his house either as a paying boarder or as a guest on a number of occasions between May 1946 and October 1946.
That name sounds so familiar. Like, I know it from not just this case.
Yeah, it does kind of sound familiar, but I can't place it. Like a character or something.
Yeah.
His girlfriend, Ann Toth, shared a room with Elizabeth. On January 8th, Elizabeth had called Hansen from San Diego, which made him one of the last people to talk to her. Case files indicate that Hansen had a number of contradictory statements to authorities about what their conversation had been about. An address book with Hansen's name on it was part of Elizabeth's belonging that had been mailed to the Examiner after the murder. While the book belonged to Hansen, he never used it. Elizabeth had been the one using it. The DA's files indicated that Hansen had tried to seduce Elizabeth, but she turned him down. He was one of the main suspects in the case and stayed a prime suspect until late 1951. Hansen was also connected to three other suspects, each of whom was a doctor: Dr. Patrick S. O'Reilly, Dr. M. M. Schwartz, and Dr. Arthur McGinnis Fault. Buzz Williams and Con Keller investigated the case on their own and felt that Hansen was the killer. Keller believed that since Hansen had been born in Denmark, that he had spent time at Sweden's medical surgical school, which would account for the precise dissection of the body. They also said that Hansen was known to hold elaborate parties at his boarding house, and LAPD officers and the chief of detectives would often attend these parties. They concluded that those men would later help him cover up the murder. In 1964, Hansen died of natural causes and no charges had ever been brought against him. While most of the suspects were men, the possibility of the killer was female was never ruled out. One theory is that since Elizabeth had checked her baggage, including her cosmetics and clothing, a week before her murder, she must have been staying with another woman. Another theory states that the assailant bisected her body because they weren't strong enough to move it in one piece. One of the first people to confess to the murder was a woman's Army Corps sergeant stationed in San Diego. They investigated this confession, but found it was groundless. Another suspect was simply referred to as Queer Woman Surgeon in the case files. Newspaper stories at the time implied that Elizabeth was either bisexual or lesbian, but the DA's files bluntly stated that Elizabeth had no use for queers.
That's a hard assumption to make when the lady is dead.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they may have talked to her friends, but back then it wasn't common to come out to people. So, we still have, so many stipulations and judgments nowadays, which is ridiculous because it's the 21st century. But back then, it was way worse. Like, way worse.
Yep.
A statement that is just completely biased and wrong.
Yep.
It's like you can't speak for the dead.
Yep. There were a couple of famous suspects as well. Mary Pacios. Italian, I don't know. A former neighbor of the Short family in Massachusetts suggested that Orson Welles was a suspect. This theory is based on...
Is he an author?
Yeah.
Okay.
This theory is based on factors as Welles... he was also an actor stuff. This is based on factors as Welles's volatile temperament and his creation of mannequins 3 months before the death of Elizabeth that featured lacerations that were pretty much identical to those inflicted on Elizabeth. These mannequins were used in the House of Mirrors set for The Lady from Shanghai, which was a film Welles was making with his ex-wife Rita Hayworth around the time that the murder took place. The scenes that had the mannequins were deleted from the film. Elizabeth's sister, Virginia, claimed that in one of her letters, she had said a movie director was going to give her a screen test. Pacios also said that Welles was familiar with the site where her body had been discovered. She believed the bisection was part of the killer's signature and an acting out of the perpetrator's obsessions. Welles applied for a passport on January 24th, which was the same day the killer mailed a packet to the LA newspaper. Welles left the country for an extended stay in Europe before they had finished the editing of Macbeth, the film he was starring in and directing. Despite persistent attempts by Republic Pictures to get him to come back to finish the film, he refused. Passio said that witnesses she had spoken to stated that Wells and the victim both frequented Brittingham's restaurant in L.A. during the same time. Waitresses also believed that Elizabeth had been dating somebody from Columbia Pictures. The last suspect we are going to talk about is the one that I find the most interesting, George Hodell. Not long after he got the news about his father's death, Steve Hodell found himself sorting through his belongings. While his father, George Hodell, hadn't been a big part of his childhood, their relationship had always been strained. George was a doctor with a distant personality who left his family shortly after Steve's 9th birthday, eventually moving to the Philippines. Going through his father's possessions, Steve discovered a photo album tucked away in a box. The album was filled with pictures of his mom, dad, and brothers, but there were also pictures of the family taken by world-famous surrealist artist Man Ray, who had been a family friend. Towards the back, there was something that caught his eyes. Two photos of a young woman, her eyes cast downward with curly, deep black hair. Steve still has no idea why he thought this, but as he looked the images over, he thought, quote, "My God, that looks like the Black Dahlia." The personal connection between Elizabeth and George that the photo suggested seemed outrageous. Steve had been part of the LAPD and worked his way up to homicide detective, so like a good detective, he started to dig up information. The procedure to use to bisect the body had been taught in the 1930s, which was when George had been in medical school. Plus, he found that the letters sent to the police from the Black Dahlia Avenger bore chilling resemblance to his dad's handwriting. Hodell had actually come under suspicion for the murder in 1945 after his secretary, Ruth Spalding, had died from a drug overdose. He was also suspected of having murdered her to cover up financial fraud, such as billing patients for tests that had never been done, and to protect valuable secrets he had obtained about police and politicians from patients obtaining illegal abortions. During this time, Hodell traveled to China, where he worked with the United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Administration. There are aspects of this case that suggested a strong connection to surrealism, which included the works of Man Ray. During late 1949, Hodell's daughter, Tamar, accused him of incestuous sexual abuse and getting her pregnant. After a public trial, he was acquitted. Three witnesses had been present during and had also participated in the acts. Two testified, while the third recanted their testimony and refused to come forward. People believe that Hodell had threatened her into silence. The trial made Tamar look like a liar. After the sexual abuse trial, Hodell came to the police's attention as suspect in the Black Dahlia case. They were investigating known sex criminals in the area and it had come out in the trial that Tamar believed her father had killed Elizabeth. Hodell's medical degree also aroused suspicion. There were at least 8 witnesses who claimed first-hand knowledge of the 1946 relationship between Hodell and Elizabeth. All of this information came to light in 2003 when George Hodell Black Dahlia file was found in the vault of the Los Angeles County District's Attorney Office. This revealed that back in 1950, Hodell had been a prime suspect. His Hollywood home had been bugged by an 18-man DA-LAPD task force between February 15th and March 27th, 1950. The transcripts of the conversations revealed that Hodell referenced performing illegal abortions, paying off law enforcement officials, and to his possible involvement in the deaths of his secretary and Elizabeth. In one of the recordings, they caught him saying, quote, "Supposing I did kill the Black Dahlia. They can't prove it now. They can't talk to my secretary anymore because she's dead. They thought there was something fishy. Anyway, now they may have figured it out. Killed her. Maybe I did kill my secretary." End quote. They also interviewed Hodell. They also interviewed Hodell in relation to the nearby June 1949 murder of Louise Springer, but the evidence to support this was not publicly available until July 2018. By April 1950, Jemison had gathered enough information to charge Hodell and was getting ready to arrest him for the murder of Elizabeth when Hodell left the U.S. once more. He earned a degree in psychiatry and counseled prisoners in the territorial prison in Hawaii for 3 years before moving to the Philippines, where he started a new family and stayed there until the 1990s. He died in 1999 in San Francisco without any charges having ever been filed.
Suspiciously, he leaves close to the time of being charged.
Yep. However, Steve believes that George re-entered the U.S. several times between 58 and 88, specifically in 1966 to 1969, to commit more murders before returning to the Philippines. During Steve's investigation into his father, he learned that his father could have been responsible for several murders. Steve suspected that his father might have been the Chicago lipstick killer of the late 1940s, the Manila jigsaw murderer of 1967, and even the Zodiac killer of the late 1960s.
Jeez, he really did not like his dad.
Or his dad was just that evil.
It's very possible.
In an episode of The Cold Case Files in 2006, Bill Curtis illustrates the mixed reaction to Steve Hodell's hypothesis as outlined in his first book, Black Dahlia Avenger. There have been LAPD officers and the district attorney that privately stated they thought that the case was solved and that Hodell had been the killer, but they didn't have the evidence they needed to take it to trial. There is mixed feelings as to the investigation done by Steve Hodell, but in my opinion, he has better evidence that his father was the killer than there is for anybody else. Yeah. Whether or not they will actually close the Black Dahlia case remains to be seen.
I don't see them closing it.
No.
They might. That'd be awesome if they could find out who did it. But it's just one of those things that I don't think they ever will. It's been too long.
There was a suicide note. And it was signed Mary, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless, say, a descendant of one of the suspects finds a note committing that, hey, I did this, and gives details that weren't released to the public.
Yeah.
That's the only way, in my opinion.
With cases this old, at this point, what point does it have in actually charging a person and closing it, especially if the person's dead?
Right.
Exactly. Other than to get the paperwork, I don't know, who knows. It's just sitting in a cold case file in the closet getting collecting dust somewhere.
Yeah, it is.
Maybe not like collecting dust, but
in you know what I mean. Some upcoming agent probably looks at it and goes, God. Oh, my head hurts. Nope, put it back in.
It's possible.
I was looking up George to see if there was anybody in his life named Mary.
Okay. I mean, it's not necessarily a clue, but it's interesting that, you know, they took the time.
I mean, like I said, it's like, people could just say it at this point now that my uncle killed Dahlia.
Oh, I know.
Just like they did back then.
But yeah, Steve felt that his dad's fascination with the darker side of surrealism and the work of Man Ray was why he cut up Dahlia the way he did. I've not looked at any of their work yet, but
I'm assuming it's dark based on him thinking that had a part in why he did what he did, if he did what he did.
And he was a polygamist during the time that Dahlia was killed.
Okay.
And I'm sure it wasn't ethical. I'm sure nobody knew about the others.
Oh, I'm sure.
Okay, no, I didn't see anybody named Mary, but
one suspect you mentioned, M.M. something.
M.M. Schwartz?
Yeah, but that's a far leap because, I mean, their name could be Mason Matthews for all that matters.
This is one image, I don't know, that's a work by Man Ray.
Interesting.
Okay.
I was expecting to see something gruesome, but
yeah, me too. Now, was the black dahlia naked when they found her?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, and any pictures that you look up of, like, her corpse, if you see one that looks like she's draped with a blanket, they never actually draped her with a blanket. The news people edited that on so that, I guess, they didn't get in trouble for sharing that. That wasn't a real blanket.
Okay. Good to know. I have seen that image. But, okay.
But, yeah. Yeah, the book I have on the Black Dahlia is the Steve Hodell's book, talking about his dad and how he discovered it and everything. Because the woman that his father was married to at the time he died from a heart attack was a lot younger than him. Like, there was probably a good 50 years difference. But that seemed to be, from what I read about him, that seemed to be his thing, is he went with younger women. I felt that it was just so that he could control them.
Well.
Looking at pictures. Looking. Well.
Considering how young the Dahlia was.
It's not going to clear up, is it? Oh, wait, there it goes, kind of.
Uh-huh.
Considering how young she was. That kind of lines up, actually.
Yeah, and the whole bugging of his apartment and the things he said, I'm like...
That's the thing. You learn about, like, these cold cases and all the evidence gathered, and you're like, why didn't you press this and that?
Yep. And the fact that all of these case files has stayed in the DA's office for 60 plus years before coming to light. Like, seriously?
Yeah.
Yeah, Elizabeth was...
Elizabeth, thank you. I'm getting her actual name.
22 when she was murdered.
That's...
But yeah, some people thought that because that Bugsy person, he was a mob boss or something. They thought... he had it done, but I don't think so. But yeah, the pictures of her face, like, she doesn't even look like herself.
No. No, it's bad. Now, was he under investigation?
Who?
The most likely suspect, George.
Yeah, they investigated him. They bugged his house and everything.
And, okay, they investigated him before he left the country.
Yeah.
Okay. I asked, that's usually a giant red flag. And they usually ask people, you know, hey, you're under investigation. Don't leave the country. I would advise it.
I don't know that he knew that he was under, actually, he probably did because of the comment he made. But it probably, they weren't, I don't think they made it known or clear of their intentions in the whole don't leave the country type deal. But yeah, they think he killed his secretary as well because she knew things. Especially considering she died of a drug overdose.
Yeah.
Apparently there's this thing where people go to the crime scene and like lay on the ground like how she was found, and somebody calls them out because of the Black Dahlia assets. It's like, really, people, you think this is a good idea? They'll never find the killer, though.
Probably not. There's just so much, I mean, there's so much just, like Vanessa suggests, it's a cold case. There's so much just cold evidence, more or less. It's hard to pinpoint.
But like you said, what's the point of closing it now?
Right.
Other than to say, closure. I closed the case.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, closure, fame, recognition for solving it.
I go for the fame recognition part nowadays.
it doesn't help that it took place, you know, back then, whereas today, there's so many.
If we, if they had the technology we have today, I think they could have found the person.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the crimes we talked about could have been solved with the right technology. But you never know. I mean, there's still cold cases today.
Yeah.
Like it happened like last week.
And I mean, her body was cleaned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. And the fact that she was basically nothing more than a transient.
Exactly. Which made her high risk.
Yeah.
And a lot harder to track, I guess.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not. She became more or less the perfect target.
Yeah. In the last episode, I meant to say something about this, but one of the lacerations was going from like her belly button down to her pubic region, almost kind of like a old-fashioned C-section, because they used to do them that way, I believe.
Yeah.
I just wonder if she had gotten pregnant by her killer.
Maybe, and that's why he killed her.
Did they find evidence of her removal?
Not that was mentioned.
I mean,
I'm sure certain factors still not known.
That I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure that if you, I'm sure there's still like black. Is it black type? Is that the expression? Surrounding case.
Say that again.
Like I'm sure there's like, I think the expression is black tape.
It's not red tape.
Red tape. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That. I'm sorry. I
he's thinking about the blacked out lines.
Yeah, the blacked out lines and... on official documents. I'm thinking about that.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're still.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that George is known for doing illegal abortions.
That's a red flag.
I mean, I know there's a lot of people who think Steve's investigation into his father was stupid or whatever. But of what I've read, and like I said, I feel that he's the strongest suspect, but he died in 1999, so what's it going to prove?
And I mean, his son would not investigate him without a good reason.
Yeah. I mean, Steve, hold on, I'm getting their names confused. Steve's the son. Yeah. He was a cop. He did murder investigation in LAPD.
And like he knew what he was doing. He knew what he was looking for.
Yeah. Now that maybe
probably doesn't make case where he's like, wait a minute, this lines up. Wait, oh no.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It could be a bit far fetched on some of the other cases like Zodiac or the lipstick killer.
I feel like at that point he may have been grasping to try to put him away for something.
Maybe. But I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
Because I could see some of the similarities between Zodiac and this to an extent.
Yeah.
I mean, Zodiac didn't slash up their victims.
True.
But
leaving notes for the cops, though, that's...
Yeah.
That's very Zodiac.
Yeah, the toying with the cops.
But again, a lot of serial killers do that.
Yeah, that's true. And is over confidence with the cops. Oh, they ain't gonna catch me.
Yeah. Well, he probably had some in his pocket.
Yeah, probably.
But you know, that's something I've not heard of a lot in my lifetime, as somebody sending letters and screwing with the cops. Or at least in the last decade or so.
Yeah.
Like, you don't get those cut and pasted notes as often.
Yeah.
No.
People don't have the patience anymore to do that, but they have the patience to kill people. Meticulously.
They don't have the patience for the post office anymore.
I mean, to be fair, there's a lot more people nowadays, a lot more mail, and the USPS gets backed up.
Yeah.
It's like your birthday with a present of the day late being delivered because of USPS shortages and yada yada. Fact of life nowadays.
That's why I just find it kind of funny.
I mean, we wouldn't be able to function without our postal workers.
Nope.
So, huge shout out to them. They're awesome.
Yes. Anyone's listening, you work for the postal service. Thank you.
We love getting things delivered for cheaper prices than UPS. So I know, Lucas, you asked when I first started the podcast if I was going to do Black Dahlia. I want to know why you were so interested.
Because it's a big case.
Yes, like, it is a big case, but there's a lot of big cases. Why this one?
Because at the time, I was watching a YouTube channel by the name of, I think, Sam and Colby. And they stayed in the hotel where she was last seen.
Oh, I remember this episode of him.
And at that time, they were during the whole paranormal thing. It was kicking off well for the channel. So, you know, they stayed over in her. They stayed overnight in the hotel, and I don't want to say they caught evidence, but they had a spooky encounter. But I don't know. That, and then you doing this podcast. I don't know. It's kind of like a hype train. I don't know. It's a ridiculous case.
One of America's most famous cold cases.
Yeah, it's a huge cold case.
Yeah.
The manner in the body was found. All that was done to the body.
Yeah.
You think more than one person could have been involved?
Ugh. Mass suspects involved.
Yeah, I think more than one person was involved in some way, shape, or form. Whether they physically helped the killer kill her, I think there was people who were in on it.
Oh, yeah.
Simply for the fact that it seemed to get covered up very well, especially with the
fingerprints.
Yes, especially with the fingerprints. And I feel the sending in her belongings to the police, which I'm sure was the actual killer doing that, screwing with the cops, because who else could have done it?
Exactly. If they would have been able to deliver those fingerprints, do you think they would have called the killer?
Well, they were just partials. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
They would have had to have been in the FBI's database as well.
True.
But the fact that they made sure that date book hat with Mark Hansen's name on it was in there.
Yeah.
I think that was like a red herring.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, think about it. Like, why would you destroy them if there wasn't a possibility of them being identified in the FBI database?
Yeah, true.
Like, if you suspected my uncle did it or whatever, I hope you wouldn't destroy the fingerprints, but...
I mean, they took the time to clean everything with gasoline, too.
I know gasoline can clean stuff that good.
I know, I was surprised. I'm like, boy, that must have been very flammable.
Yeah.
I just, in my head, I'm like, how do you do that?
Also, I mean, they covered her in gasoline. They could have burned her. They chose not to.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole dumping of the body. I get the bisecting could have been done to help in transportation of the body. But yeah, they could have taken her
anywhere.
Other places where she wouldn't have been found.
Yeah.
But they staged her body.
Yeah. Like, I mean, if they didn't want her found, they could have disposed of her in many ways. Personally, I would choose the ocean, plus sharks.
Yeah.
Thing.
I mean, if it was a whole body, I don't think the sharks would have bothered it, but you cut somebody in half. That looks like chum. I mean, to be, like, grotesquely honest.
Yeah, they let out that body to be seen.
And they could have even, like, tied weights to it at that.
Yeah, I know.
No,
it was meant to be seen. Otherwise, you wouldn't have bothered cleaning it.
Yeah, like, I mean, that was completely 100% intentional.
So I went back to reading about George just to see if he was maybe in the military or something where his fingerprints would be in a database somewhere.
Yeah.
But I don't see anything about that. But he was, He was considered a musical prodigy and had an IQ of 186.
That's smart.
This composer Sergei Rachmaninoff traveled to his parents' house to hear the boy play. But the interesting thing is he graduated high school, Pasadena High School, at the age of 15 and entered the prestigious California Institute of Technology in Pasadena, but was forced to leave the university 1 year later due to a sex scandal involving a professor's wife. Though this is not the only account. He had impregnated the woman and wanted to raise their child together, but she refused. The affair between Hodel and the woman caused her marriage to fall apart.
Yeah, that is sad, sus.
And he had a common law wife named Amelia, had a son by her, while he was also legally married to a person named Dorothy Anthony and had a daughter with her. But yeah.
I think it was the cop's dad. Like, he's the most, out of all of them, viable suspect. And he had medical training. Like, that's a huge, I mean, like, obviously this person had medical training.
And all those other suspicious things that happened during that, around the same time as Elizabeth's death.
Yeah. It's just too.
And the whole case with his daughter, like, just reading that ticked me off.
Yeah. Like,
because just like you said, Steve's not going to investigate his father without good reason. And I don't see a daughter accusing their father of rape, basically, for no good reason.
Exactly. Especially not back then.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, even nowadays, not now. Unless you're those horrible people who claim rape and you weren't raped.
Yeah. I mean, those people are real, but most of the time when that happens, it's a boyfriend-girlfriend type thing and somebody's pissed off at the other.
Exactly. Which I don't think they realize how much that could ruin somebody's life.
Yep. And hurt the other people who are actually victims of being able to come forward.
It credits them somewhat, unfortunately. And it shouldn't. I think each case is different.
Yep.
But I mean, like, don't lump the ones who lie about it in with the ones it actually happened to.
Yep.
Two separate things. Victims, psychos.
That's the two sides of the coin.
You have to be some type of psychotic to claim rape. I'm sorry. And you weren't raped. Like, sociopath something.
I could see it because, I don't know, in my mind, I don't see a guy making me that upset. Because I imagine it's a woman or man, I guess. They get turned down by somebody and then they're like, well, I spent a few minutes alone with them. I could lie about this. They've got to be off. They got to be psychotic in some way to come to that conclusion instead of being like, they're not interested. Oh, well, I'll move on.
Exactly. I mean, like, I know some people can't take no for an answer, but those people are just creepy and have issues. They didn't work out with their therapist. They don't claim rape.
Yeah.
Not saying people need therapy, but you need some type of help.
Yeah, some sort of support system. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't think she would have claimed rape if he didn't do something to her. He would have investigated him unless he had a good reason. Like, that just would not have happened.
Yep.
I mean, I would like for them to solve it. Just so to at rest, put her to rest. So to speak.
Yeah.
I 100% believe she haunts the area. And I'm not saying her killer being put to justice would resolve that, but I think it would be nice for the killer to be identified. Not that they can charge them now, like you said, but it would be nice for justice, quote unquote, to be served for her.
Yeah. And if she's got any family still living.
Yeah. It would be nice. Closure. Basically what I'm trying to get to is like, it'd be nice for them, there to be some sort of closure for her and her family.
Yeah.
If there are any remaining. It's just sad to think of all these horrible murders that got away with it because of lack of evidence or technology.
Or police incompetence.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say it, but you did. It's true.
There's too many cases that I'm like, seriously, if it wasn't for the cops screwing things up, it would have been solved.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Which one did we talk about where, I mean, the police completely botched it?
Well, I know JonBenet Ramsey.
That one. I think it was that one we were talking about.
Because they just let the family trample through the house for hours.
Yeah, that was it. It was that one. It was that one.
And the father found the body. Like, no. I mean, if it was like he woke up and there's the body, that's one thing. But he searched the house and found the body. That's just weird.
That's suspicious. I mean, unless it's like you knew she was home. You couldn't find her. You're like, where the is my daughter? And you found her. But still, you let them trample through the house.
Yep.
How much evidence was destroyed or contaminated because of that?
But like the excuse was like, well, basically, in my head, it's like a parent who has a child that won't shut up. And you're just finally like, fine, do it. That's basically what the cops did with the family is they were just hounding them with stuff. And they didn't want to just sit quietly in the living room while they investigated. And the head detective was like, fine, whatever, go search the house.
I mean, I'm sorry if the head detective should have lost his job for that. We're being demoted. Something. But yeah, like, I mean, if they did it, which possible, they could have destroyed evidence because they knew where it was. They knew what to do. They knew what to mess with.
Yep.
What also kills me, speaking about cops, is like people who call the cops with false claims. And they get mad about the consequences of those false claims. Like, you can prove that was a false claim. Don't be repercussions.
Yeah.
Don't get mad.
Just like all the people calling in on the Black Dahlia case, they got charged with obstruction of justice.
Yeah. Like, and it really ticks me off when they call them on African Americans, especially African American men. I was like, you're putting his life at risk just because. Yep. He's walking in the park and you don't like how he looks.
Yep.
And he's not even bothering you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm talking about the case we watched on the news the other day.
I know you're saying off topic.
Not really, police incompetence. Police okay. Incompetent people. You call the police and then incompetent police come and shoot an innocent person, people. But like, you're always going to have competent cops and incompetent cops. It's not going to change.
And if we want to be
corrupt cops,
if you want to be truthful, racist cops.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was 100% racist cops.
Because I still think you can be an incompetent cop and not be the racist cop that shoots the black guy just because he's black. You could just be stupid.
Yeah.
You could be stupid and spill a cup of coffee on some fingerprints.
Exactly. Like what happened with Black Dahlia. Something happened to those fingerprints. Now I don't know what happened to them.
Yeah.
The whole, they were compromised. Out.
Like, yeah. Was it raining? Did they drop them in a puddle?
Did he think it was a tissue and blew his nose on it?
Right.
I'm so glad that technology is so much better now with fingerprinting.
Compromised. He just misplaced it with one of his bills.
It blew out the window because he had the window down.
Yeah.
In the plane.
Yeah.
It went out. It went into the toilet and went out the disposal.
I mean, they could have flushed him.
Flushed into the air.
But yeah, when I read things, they're like, "Did they had this such and such piece of evidence, but it was compromised?" I'm like, "Give me more information. How?
How?
Don't just say it's compromised."
I mean, it's like somebody, like literally, they had the smoking gun and lost the smoking gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not saying the fingerprints of the smoking gun, but I do believe they could have aided in the case.
Right. Well, it's the same concept, yeah.
I think they were destroyed because those prints. would have been able to be identified in the database. So at least they were partials, but I think that they could have.
They definitely would have aided.
There was a reason that they were compromised.
Yeah.
It wasn't just police incompetence. I think it was intentional.
Yep.
Maybe. We'll never know.
I know, it drives me crazy.
Yeah.
There are things that will make me lose sleep at night, and that's one of them. Like, what the fuck happened to those prints? It's like, don't lose, like Felicia said, don't just say, well, they were compromised. How?
Yeah. Yep. Like, I understand cops wanting to keep information to themselves and not sharing it with the media because the media is crazy. And I think the media is to blame for a lot of killers not being caught. Because
or
they just want
to.
Yeah. They just want to share too much information because it makes for a good story.
Right. But
in the end, once the case becomes open and they release case files, give us all the information, not bullshit answers like it was compromised.
Did you even have one to begin with? Like,
yeah.
I mean, that's an information I feel like the public should are entitled to know.
He's fake.
Like, there's certain things I'm like, yeah, that should have been kept quiet until now. But something like that, I believe, should have been public knowledge once they were able to release that to the public.
Like, if it was police incompetence and some idiot spilled coffee on it, they should have brought him out in front of a camera and was like, this is an idiot. He destroyed fingerprints. Like,
don't be this guy.
Don't be this guy.
Yeah. He's the reason we can't catch the killer. Don't be like Fred. But But on the subject of media being crazy and causing a lot of problems, I didn't say this last week. But with the media contacting her mother and telling her she won a beauty pageant or beauty prize, whatever, and then being like, oh, yeah, no, sorry, she's been murdered.
That's just wrong.
And then flying her out to LA so that she can help with the investigation and then not letting her be in contact with the police or any other media outlets.
That's suspicious, in my opinion. Also, it's so wrong. Like, that poor mother.
Yeah.
Like, if something happened to my little girl and that's how I found out, you better bet I would come and also bring the light going, fire in my hands, thorny crown on, wide eyes, bring it, bitch. That's my favorite Sabrina, Jeff. I'm sorry.
Are we sure it's the media outlet that contacted her, not the killer?
Yes.
Oh, it was the media.
It was the media.
Okay.
They did it just for the story so that they could get all the information before anybody else about Elizabeth.
Yeah.
The general idea of media hasn't changed. They want to be the first one to get the worst story out.
I'm sorry, but like, I think media used to be helpful and inform and like good with information. Then there was some case where something happened and then it just like it snowballed. Then it's that one thing that it just.
And now with social media and computers and everything, like, that's
so much worse.
Why so many people's like, oh, the world's so much worse. I'm like, no, not really. It's just we can release news stories in a blink of an eye. We can tweet when somebody gets shot in a matter of seconds, whereas before it would take days to put the thing together.
Like, that's one thing about not having cable that I really like is,
oh yeah,
we don't see the news that often unless it's something we want to know about. Like, for hurricane season, for example, like when Hurricane Felicia hits, we're all going to die.
Yeah, I saw that. I kind of got a little excited.
Oh, God.
Oh,
God.
Oh, no.
I'd just be interesting to see which coast Felicia hits.
I think it's been Hurricane Leslie, but they always fizzle out. I'm just like, can you at least make landfall? Like, don't be bad. It's like a little breeze or something, but could you just make landfall?
It just fizzles out. Hurricane Leslie.
I never heard of a single Hurricane Leslie actually hitting land.
This year, the L is Linda, I believe.
That's my aunt's name. We're all in fucking trouble. It's gonna be worse than Felicia. And I mean, that's what's so messed up with media and social media is it takes one little thing that should be confined. It makes it big, and everybody and their brother is calling in saying they did it.
Yep. All right. So thank y'all. That's it for this week's episode. Check us out on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and stay spooky, everybody, and see you next time.